Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, another unafeared individual, Larkin Rose, author of The Iron Web and The Most Dangerous Superstition that just came out. Go ahead and give out a plug for your book, man, where they can go and buy your stuff. Give out your webpage.
Sure. The webpage is just larkinrose.com. The only thing to remember is it's LarkenRose.com. And The Most Dangerous Superstitions, $10, which includes shipping. It's only 200 pages, so it's not daunting or terrifying or intimidating. But it is by far the most important thing I've ever written. You can also get The Iron Web and How to Be a Successful Tyrant and read a bunch of free...
Oh, I forgot about that one, How to Be a Successful Tyrant. Tell us about that.
The first one. Yep.
Yeah, tell us about that.
That was a fun one. That one, it came out when I was in prison, but I actually wrote it before. It's basically a manual for how to be a tyrant, how to subjugate people and get away with it. Now, as people who know me could probably guess, I didn't write it because I actually wanted more tyrants. But it's written as a playbook for tyrants so that their intended victims can look and go, oh, that's how they do it, and that's why... It sounds so nice, and it sounds so persuasive, and they're out there talking like they're serving us and helping us, and, you know, with gun control being a perfect example of if you're a tyrant and you want to deprive your subjects of the ability to forcibly resist your psychotic, megalomaniacal schemes, you can't just say, I don't want you to have the power to resist me. You have to come up with a better excuse than that. Like, oh my gosh, look what happens. Look at the carnage. When normal people have guns, only my agent should have guns, then you'll all be protected. So the book goes through a bunch of specific tricks that tyrants use to make people basically cheer for their own enslavement. Because even though, you know, in the movies and comic books, bad guys are always evil and doing their evil cackles and stuff, well, that doesn't work in real life. And nobody would be dumb enough to come along and say, I want power because, frankly, I like power. They will always come along and say, I want power so I can serve you and we can work together to make this country, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah.
You know, I started kind of getting the mindset when they go to serve. It's almost like, you know, you need a bull to service your cows, you know.
I'm going,
okay, I get it. You know, I wanted to spend most of this hour talking about what your predictions are or what you're preparing for. You know, I've predicted that we would get to this point where we are now, but I anticipated in the 90s, I thought it was going to be by the time my children got to be my age when I first started this in 88. So my oldest child is 25. So I was thinking at least another, you know, 3-4 years that before it got to where they were doing all the stuff that they're doing now, you know, Patriot Acts and so on. And it since 9/11, that kind of was a game changer. And they've amped it up, and it's getting to the point to where it's become obvious that the government's just a gang with a flag. And they're going around and chest out and respecting my authority. My authority says what's yours is mine now, and you don't get to keep it. And it, sooner or later, it gets to where it implodes upon itself. So I'm getting mobile. You know, just for no other reason than, you know, as an inspiration to others is one benefit, but it's really for my own survival. I am like, I'm a love, man. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I'm just like, I want to breathe in and out and enjoy my family. I just started having grandkids. That was my goal from the beginning is, you know, being able to enjoy my grandchildren, pass on a good name to my children, and, you know, I'm good. But, you know, it's going to get really bad. And I have to prepare for it. So my question is, you know, what are you doing to prepare? I mean, are you preparing?
Well, it's funny because part of what you said reminded me, and I actually found it in 10 seconds, of a quote straight out of How to Be a Successful Tyrant. I think this is a really good indication. I think this is outstanding. The best thing that could possibly happen is for them to charge towards tyranny like they're doing right now. It's not nice, it's not pleasant, but it's the biggest mistake they ever make. Here's a direct quote from The Most Dangerous Superstition. The most common mistake tyrants make is to grab too quickly for complete totalitarian power. A tyrant may get most of the way there, and then the peasants start grumbling or even resisting, and instead of taking his time to do it right, the short-sighted tyrant attempts to grab complete control quickly, martial law style. Next thing you know, the formerly successful tyrant is a corpse. The key to getting the last little bit of power is patience, end quote. So I'm thrilled that they're doing what tyrants always do, which is they feel their grip slipping and they grab tighter.
Because they don't know anything else.
Because it's that, like... yep, if they had, you know, if they had had the brains to come along and say, all right, the next puppet we put up as president is going to say, we're going to have 30% tax cuts across the board. We're going to be slashing this department, that department, and the other thing. We're going to, if they did things that would actually release enough of the free market, which we don't have a free market, but at least release enough freedom to get, you know, the productive people cranking out for their masters again, that person would be deified. He would be a successful, intelligent tyrant. But tyrants are, this is the mistake they always make, and I love it. I'm thrilled that they're making it.
You know, I tell you this, Larkin, I my concern has been, just like you say, you know, the biggest thing a libertarian would fear would be a government program that works. And I don't think we have anything to fear. But, you know, the one thing that I'm really concerned about is that they do come in and try to convince us and are able to convince people that it can work. And that was the big fear during the Dr. Paul campaign. A lot of people that were supportive of that campaign even had, you know, voiced a concern that are we going to promote the delusion that American politics can be a vehicle towards freedom? And I argued, I said, you know, I don't think so. I don't think we have to worry about that because I've gone through this. I've been, you know, really nose to the grindstone since 88. And I think that the next generation, generation next, was going to learn the exact same thing that I did, that it's broke. It's really broke. It's more broke than you could possibly imagine. And you have to get up close to it and be part of it and inside it to see how broke it is. And you saw the manifestation of that very thing at Porkfest. These young minds get it. They're like, we are so far past this thing. There's no fixing it. There's just surviving it. Yep. So now I'm looking at how are we going to survive this? I mean, you do a great service by articulating this and kind of, you know, being one of the Thomas Paines. I mean, you know, I really enjoy your writing. But the thing is that in the end, I just want to keep breathing in and out and, you know, let it all collapse and them and fight each other, whatever. I'm over at Gull's Gulch somewhere, and then, you know, maybe we'll have a free society afterwards in one form or another. I don't know. I'm not locked into a country. I don't have this patriotic, nationalistic kind of anchor here when this government is the one that's been so oppressive to me. How would I have some any kind of loyalty to such an evil entity? So I'm not locked into being here. I could be somewhere else. So I'm kind of extricating myself as quickly as possible to where I can be mobile. And when we come back, I want to know what Larkin's doing, because I know he wants to breathe in and out. You know, he wants to, you know, enjoy his life with Tessa and Alyssa. You know, his wife Tessa and his daughter Alyssa. You know, this is going to be, you know, an inspiration for others, knowing what people like Larkin is doing. We're going to find out when we come back.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, what's that mission here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedom's Lunesse, freedomsphoenix.com. My very, 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 very special guest, Larkin Rhodes, is on. Oh, what do you call him? You know, patriot, whatever the heck that means. You know, an individualist, a savior, a leader. What the heck, man? How do you classify you, Larkin?
Enemy of the state.
Enemy of the state. Oh, that's good. I like that. Okay. Now, as an enemy of a state, I mean, do we have to be the state? You know, when you say the state, is there a particular one? Or just all
an enemy
of,
any state?
Any state. Well, you know, and what does that mean, you know, the state? Go ahead and say, I'm going to be an enemy of the state. Well, what is that?
Being an enemy of any organization that pretends to have the right to rule. It's really more than being an enemy of the gang or the people in power or the delusional narcissists who claim to, at any given moment, be the rightful rulers. Really what I am is an enemy of the superstition that any of that is legitimate.
Where did you come to this, though? I mean, you know, we know when you launched your persona on the internet with all your actions and so on, but there had to be, you know, Larkin wasn't battling the man at maybe not at six, okay? So when did you start coming to this? And, of course, your wife, was she of this mind before you got married, after you got married? What was the inception of the idea that you would oppose the state?
We were both pretty libertarian when we got married, and we kind of each nudged each other towards, you know, accidentally nudged each other towards completely giving up statism, going from libertarian to anarchist. And it really was just a matter of wanting my own belief system to be consistent. You know, so many people sort of cling to whatever they were brought up in and say, I'm right and you're wrong. But I actually, if something felt uncomfortable in my own head, if I felt like I don't fully understand that or there seems to be a conflict, I want to resolve it. I don't want to be arguing something that's wrong. You know, the first priority is make sure you know what's right and then argue it. And basically, statism is always in conflict with itself. And that's actually the good news. Because this book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, and this has been 15 years in the making, this book. I intentionally wasn't writing it until I thought I could do the topic justice. But I was already talking about these things in chat rooms in 1996. I was ex-Ragnar in 1996 at AOL. And Yammer.
Oh, are you Ragnar?
One of them. There are other ones.
Okay, yeah, you know, I see that. Now, Ragnar, you're talking about the character out of Atlas Shrugged, right?
Yep, Ragnar Danishold, or how are you?
Yeah, the pirate or something, yeah.
Yep, the pirate who was stealing back from the government and giving it to the people it was stolen from.
You know, there's one thing that I came to understand was they always talked when I was a young man in the early 90s getting exposed to libertarianism. And you kind of find out, you know, either you're kind of libertarian oriented or you're not. You don't try and rationalize that you should be in charge of anybody. You just don't want anybody in charge of you. You're kind of like a hobbit. You know, I don't want to wear the Ring of Power. I just want to chuck it in the fires of Mordor.
Exactly.
So what happened was there was a joke, and it goes, what's the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian? And the answer is about 6 or 7 years if you're paying attention. And I knew exactly what they meant by that. And then you have the big L and the small L libertarians. What they mean by that is a big L libertarian is someone that wants to play politics. You know, everything would be good if I wore the ring, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then you have the small L libertarians, like, libertarianism is not about ring wearing, man. You know,
right.
So you kind of evolve into this. But let's get to where you are now. I mean, what is your living condition? You're on the Lone Prairie in a basement apartment in New York City? I mean, and what's your plan for the years to come?
We're in a secret anti-government bunker out in the... No, we live in the suburbs of Philadelphia in our house waiting for the bank to steal it. We don't know when they'll get along, but get around to that. We're actually going to move to an addition on my mom's house because she's getting up there in years and needs somebody around. So I'm in the process of building that. But as far as, like, what to do considering what's coming down the pike, because I think this collapse is, it's only just barely begun, and it's not just going to be economic. You know, the people who have been trained all their life to beg to nanny state to save them aren't going to have the foggiest idea what to do when it's not there, or when it's so weak that it says, sorry, we're not doing anything for you. And I think, so we do own... land up in New Hampshire with a little cabin on it. We're not residents there yet, but we're ready to run there if and when things get really, really bad. But I think the two priorities here, you know, for me at least, are number one, see how many people I can get to understand and accept the principle of self-ownership, that I own me and you own you. I mean, it's a painfully simple concept. The only reason everybody doesn't grasp it is because they've gone through years and years and years of indoctrination into believing that they're the property of the collective, the state, the government, because we are the government and it's us and it you know, all the bogus excuses that are made to make people accept the idea that they should be beholden to a master who calls himself a servant. Yeah, the guy who steals your stuff and bosses you around, he works for you. And all this total bunk that we were all taught growing up in school.
As we were doing the pledge.
Right. I pledge allegiance to a flag and a republic? Holy smokes, what is this, the evil empire?
You know, do they still do that? You know, I don't even know. I mean,
they still do. And my new book mentions it, and it might offend a few people. But they believe the good news, again, is they believe this stuff, but it's only because they've been indoctrinated. They still know, as a general rule, you don't steal, you don't boss people around, you don't act like a thug, you respect other people, you spend your own money, they spend theirs. It's only in the realm of politics and this thing called authority and government that they think, well, it's okay if you rob your neighbor by way of voting for the local school board to raise property taxes or voting for this party that's going to impose this tax. It's only by way of that superstition that most people are advocating violence and theft and all that. And if they could just learn. So again, step one was see how many people I can get to understand, oh yeah, I just own me and you just own you. And it doesn't matter how many rituals and elections and other stuff happen. That's still the case. And I'm still not allowed to rob you.
Now, let me ask you this. What's been your personal success with people of not necessarily philosophical bents. I mean, let's do a demographic of age. You know, is it easier for the young? I imagine it is, but I'm wondering, are you even capable of changing someone from a conservative, someone that's a constitutionalist, someone that's a Republican, someone that's even a libertarian, and that's, you know, say over 50, 60 years old, and bring them around to this just agorist, voluntarist, leave-me-alone-ist, anarchist thing? You know, is that even possible?
Yes. It may not be very frequent, but yes, it's possible. And in fact, it's happening in huge numbers now, way more than I've
been. Yeah, I've been kind of surprised. And I tell you what motivated them. All their money's gone. All gone. Gone, 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 gone. So we're going to find out more from Larkin Rose. You guys stay right there. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people dying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it.
Get over it. Yeah, get over it here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Special guest, Larkin Rose, the man. You know, The family. You know, now that you're kind of experienced in this for quite some time, you know, I did want to get back to the demographics. You know, we had this discussion about a week ago. I was with some friends, and the discussion, you know, I just off the cuff made a statement. I go, you know, it's going to be the grandpas, man. This is, I can see where this is going. It's, you know, what investment do you have? Because I remember just, probably about 7 years ago, we had for 2 years straight at our Freedom Summits, which we got to get you out for a Freedom Summit, man. That'd be good. We have had some people talking about expatriating, you know, to New Zealand, going to Panama, and we put a lot of stuff on Freedom's Phoenix about it. You need to have the courage to start thinking about being able to just move out of the country. You just got, you know, I'm good, man. I'm over here. Looking for a beach somewhere. You know, I'm going to, you know, smoke ganja and have waves lap over my toes in the sand. I mean, you know, I win. So these options are there. But as a young man with a young family, kids getting the station wagon you're going with. Well, now they move out and they start having their own kids. You know, grandpas are kind of, you know, they're a little bit more rooted into the country more than a young person or even a young family. So I'm wondering at what point do they start going, no, this is, I, yes, I have been the parasitic class. Yes, I have enslaved my grandchildren to fund my entitlement. Yes, and I don't mind as long as I keep getting it. And then when I don't get it or the inflation goes up really high, all of a sudden I get high-minded and principled and I want to save my grandchildren, you know? So I see that coming. And then, of course, you have the young. Now they get into enormous debt with all of this. It's like education debt bubble. And it's just like the housing bubble. And all of a sudden, they got this enormous debt. They're never going to be able to pay it off. And they don't have a job. Inflation's going to be hitting. I mean, it's just from every direction. And I'm wondering where you think the big push for us to extricate ourselves from this superstition is going to come from. Who first? And even if it's a fewer number of grandparents, will they have the older libertarians, the anarchists, are they going to have a big role to play just because they got more experience and resources and whatever? How do you see this playing out over the next year or two?
Well, I think the younger generations have a huge advantage in that the cynicism and doubt and questioning authority is sort of, you know, they haven't been indoctrinated for 50 years. They've only been indoctrinated for a few. And I think it's sort of a lot of them have an easier time thinking this whole thing's a crock. This doesn't make sense. This is a joke. You know, everybody who runs for office is a complete liar. I think the level of blind nationalism has been dwindling for, you know, since World War II, has been going downhill. So I think they have less of an indoctrination to overcome. But I do see a lot of people of, you know, whether they're old or middle-aged or everything in between, starting to pay attention too. And I, you know, of course it's easy to point at how bad things are getting and saying, well, that's helping, actually. It's helping wake people up to see how bad things are. But I really think there's something weird and almost magic happening that allow people to consider philosophical ideas like, you know, you own yourself and you're not beholden to any master, including the one that calls itself government. And I remember, literally, 10 years ago when I was already an anarchist, I knew maybe 6 people who would dare to out loud say, yeah, me too, I don't believe in the state at all. Now I probably know 6,000 at least. And the rate of growth at which this is becoming something that you're allowed to talk about. Like before, if you said that, almost everybody, oh, that's ridiculous, I'm going to run the other direction. And now you have people like Stefan Molyneux and Mark Stevens people out there, and even Bob Casey, and there's a bunch of people sort of coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden talking about a voluntary society. And they don't just, you know, of course, they're most people are still statists and still, oh, that's ridiculous, that'll never work, or no, there's, you know, some reason they don't want to think about it. But tons and tons of people are paying attention going, huh, okay, well, how would this work? And I've told a lot of people, you know, when you get to the point of thinking, well, how would this work? You're already there. It's just a matter of time. When you get past the, no, we have to have a master. You know, if you're not saying that anymore, then it's just a matter of time and thinking things out to realize, yeah, I own me, and these political rituals don't give anybody the right to enslave me and make me pay for wars I don't like and swipe my stuff to give it to somebody else or whatever it is.
You know, the one thing that really kind of surprised me, it was just, I think it was yesterday, we had a story up where Ralph Nader was saying that he saw the future and it's the progressives and libertarians overlapping and challenging of. And I'm going, yeah, I can understand why he would say that. But a lot of these guys, they don't understand our opposition to war, our opposition to tyranny, our opposition to controls, our opposition to, you know, the legislation of, I don't know, for better term, lack of a better term, morality. For, you know, our opposition to that kind of overlaps and rings true, the drug war, all kinds of stuff. I can see why progressives, they go, yeah, 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 what the libertarians say. And they got a good reason for it. Yeah, and I own myself and all that kind of stuff. What Ralph does not understand is that once the progressives, and I was years on Air America Radio, man. I had my dose of I love Obama and Kucinich. I mean, you know, that I'd be nice to them. It was amazing they'd have me as their token libertarian. But what I really understood was once they got that self-ownership in their mind, it's like they said in The Matrix, like a splinter in your mind.
Yep.
Once you do that, it's just a matter of time. So yep, that's all I tried to do is implant that. Well, I put my hand on your shoulder, and I just got to ask you a question. You know, just imagine my hands on your shoulder, and I'm asking you, whose life is this? Well, I mean, you know, it's either yours or somebody else's. I mean, you know, so once you start them down that road, it just takes time.
Yep.
And I don't think Ralph and these guys understand it's not going to be a political philosophical overlapping. It's going to be an independent mind free philosophy thing.
Yeah, anti-political.
Anti-political. Yeah, absolutely.
Not just apolitical, but specifically anti-political, of realizing there isn't the machine called government, which is a machine of domination and control. That can't be the answer. That's the problem. It's like we're going to invent a good kind of cancer. Like, no, what we want is none of it, not a new kind of it. You know, we don't want a little bit smaller one or one that doesn't grow as fast. We want none of it. And when you really just grasp the concept of self-ownership and compare it, again, this is, you know, and when half of the world's falling apart, I like to point to the good news here. The good news is the obstacle we have to overcome is not that all the people out there like to attack and rob their neighbors. It's just they've been taught that there's a way that you can do that that's okay, which is called government. And, you know, the progressives, oh, yeah, we're into libertarianism. And it takes all of 20 seconds for me, with me asking them questions, to show that, no, you don't, which is, okay, I earn money and there's some government program you want. What do you advocate be done to me if I don't pay for it? Put in a cage? Okay, don't call yourself a libertarian, please. If you want to put me in a cage because I don't want to pay for your bad idea, you're not a libertarian yet. Keep thinking about things till you get there.
You know, there was an opportunity we had, a libertarian candidate. He's now a judge, John Buttrick. He's a sitting judge. And he was a candidate for governor as a libertarian in 94. And for 4th of July, they had him up doing one of the Clear Channel station shows here. And he went to let this one woman go on and on about how we got to do this stuff and why it's obligation of and people and government. And he let her go, and we're like, oh, man, what is good? And he finally, when she had a breath, he goes, voluntarily? And, man, it just cut her off right there. And I'm going, you the man. Well, we'll get back with the man, Larkin Rose, here in just a little bit. You guys stay right there.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
crank up the rhetoric. Now, let me tell you what the rhetoric is. NADER, Progressive Libertarian Alliance, the most exciting new political dynamic in U.S. Well, they're talking about Gerald Celente. He's making kind of the same comments. And then they went on to say, longtime American politics gadfly Ralph Nader, a man of many ideas, almost diametrically opposed by most libertarian conservatives, said Wednesday that he's seeing a coming convergence of liberals, progressives, and libertarian conservatives in the wake of a worsening financial crisis and dogged partisanship that's put the government into gridlock. Blah, 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 blah. Now, the thing is that they go, you know, prepare for the rise of libertarian progressives. Do those terms even go together, Larkin?
No.
What do they mean by that?
What it means is the progressives are trying to hijack the enthusiasm that a lot of people suddenly have for libertarianism because they're starting to understand the philosophy. But you can't, you know, libertarianism is a principle. It's not like a building or something. Like the Republican Party or the Democrat Party is just this establishment that you can hijack. Like if you hijack libertarianism and do something else with it, it's not libertarianism anymore.
Well, that's what the Libertarian Party has been trying to do, and I think the Libertarian Party is pretty far removed from the libertarian movement now.
Yeah, and I've been bashing them recently too. And there's actually a part in The Most Dangerous Superstition, not just about the party in particular, but how destructive the belief in authority is on most of the people who want freedom, because they're tricked into believing, well, the way to do it is to get a nice guy on the throne. Because, you know, we need the law to tell us we're allowed to be free. And holy smokes, first of all, you're never going to get it. Never happened ever and never will. Why would there ever be a government that says, we have the right to rule you, but we're not going to?
And we're going to do it nicely. Right, we're going to be nicely. Nice about it, you know? I understand, Larkin. I'm just hopeful that there's enough people that are going to be able to kind of manifest this in a way that's going to make a difference. And how would that be? I mean, would it be financially? Would it be?
That leads perfectly into number two. Aside from the fact that there's no such thing as, you know, libertarian rulers, like the best they could do is quit, is the trouble is that when libertarians look to government, they're actually reinforcing in their own heads that they need authorities' permission. What it's going to look like when we actually get freedom is a bunch of people who all the way escape the superstition, who all the way understand, I own myself. And that guy over there, he can call himself president, he can call himself king or emperor or congressman, he can call himself anything he dang well pleases. He still doesn't have the right to take one penny from me without my consent. And what you're going to see, instead of political activism and protests in front of government buildings and petitions and elections and new political parties, you're going to see a bunch of people who say, we own ourselves and we're going to act like it. And we don't care if you call us criminals, because all a criminal is somebody who disobeys a politician. And we don't care anymore that authority says we're evil and nasty. We don't care that the parasite class says, you're lawbreakers. Yep, we're lawbreakers, because your law says we have to give our money to you to use on your stupid agenda, and we don't care. We don't feel bad about disobeying you. And that is the hurdle to achieving freedom, because so many people, even some of the most ardent pro-freedom activists, they still so much want the approval of authority. They want the law to tell them they're allowed to keep what they earn. They want the law to tell them they're allowed to decide what to eat and drink and smoke and all that. Instead of, you know, imagine 10% of the population woke up tomorrow and just said, I own myself. I respect the self-ownership of everybody else. And beyond that, I couldn't care less what the law says. The law is politician scribble.
You know, that's pretty much
so what?
That's pretty much how the entire society works anyway. I mean, we live in an anarchist society. I get up in the morning. Nobody, the government's not waking me up unless I'm in prison. You know, I'm not told where I got to go. I go to the grocery market and voluntary exchange. I mean, of course, the gang with the flag gets their cut. But, I'm just, we really operate as autonomous beings anyway. It's just when they want to get their share of our productivity that all of this superstition comes in as a justification for them to get their cut. They're just a gang with a flag. And I got this one, I should do this. I'll see if I can pull it up for this. It's a short, just a minute thing as a drag queen comedian, one of the guys anarchists showed me, and he's talking about how they go around claiming countries with flags. He goes, hey, I put my flag here, I own it. And the India goes to Great Britain, says, what, you can't, we live here, 500 million people. They go, got a flag? We got a flag, and our rule is you got to have a flag, and we got a flag, we win. And I'm just going, if that isn't the way they think. So I'm looking forward to a time when, I tell you where it's going to happen. It's when they can no longer pay the Soviet troop. I mean, when you can't pay the, just like the Soviet Union just fell, I think we're going to be looking at the same things here. And in my conversations with municipal employees, especially police officers and people that I know, and I go, they'll say something, they go, well, I'm just, I'm going to retire pretty soon. I'm just waiting for my pension and all this. And I go, did you ever learn that your pension's gone? I mean, it's gone. And even if you do get it fully funded, it's with inflated dollar, whatever lifestyle you were promised, or you thought you're going to, under the promise that you're going to support the collective, that's gone, man. Now what? And I don't think they have an answer. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And, another thing I think of when thinking of the state enforcers, I won't call them law enforcers because law implies legitimacy, but the state mercenaries, imagine if they went out tomorrow and half of the people treated them like people. Just said, get out of my face. Like, who do you think you are? Wow, you have a little piece of metal that says sheriff or whatever on it, and you have a gun. I have a gun, too. So where exactly did you think you got the right to treat me like dirt and pretend that you're my rightful master? Because if the problem is the belief in authority in the victims of tyranny is what allows it to keep happening. The cops can hang on to the belief that what they're doing is legitimate, because even their victims act like it's legitimate. They catch somebody with pot and, oh, sorry, yeah, I got caught, and timidly walk into the cop car. And instead of saying, what on earth makes you think that some jackass in D.C. scribbling some words on a piece of paper gives you the right to drag me off and put me in a cage because I smoked a leaf, you moron?
I want to play this. I got this one up, and it's just, we got enough time. I'm going to go ahead and play this because it just, I'm going to play it. It speaks for itself. Here we go.
Built up empires. We stole countries. That's what you do. That's how you build an empire. We stole countries with the cunning use of flags. Yeah. You just sail around the world and stick a flag in. I claim India for Britain. And they go, you can't claim us. We live here. 500 million of us. Do you have a flag? We don't need a bloody flag. It's our country, you bastard. No flag, no country. You can't have one. That's the rules that I've just made up. And I'm backing it up with this gun that was lent.
Get it? I mean, it's the same. I mean, how hard is that? I mean, that's just so perfect an example of how these guys think. It's just, I got a flag, a shiny badge, a parchment with an embossed seal on a clipboard, served at your front door by a guy in a uniform with the always available gun. If that is your entire argument, you already lost. Larkin, thanks for coming on, man. It was good to spend time with you. We got to do this more often.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. And go ahead and give out your website again so they know how to go get your goodies.
LarkinRose.com. That's LarkenRose.com. All three books. You can actually get all three for $30 total, including shipping.
$30 total, all the books, man. I suggest you do it because it really articulates the philosophy to its logical conclusion. You own yourself. It's really no more complex than that. Larkin, thanks for coming on. It's always a pleasure talking to you. We'll be back Monday. You know, I'm not going to take the holiday off. We'll come visit with you on all the stuff we did at the gun shows this weekend with our wallet voting. Oh, it's just starting to take off. We'll talk to you Monday. This is Ernest Hancock. I'm publisher of freedomsphoenix.com and the radio talk show host of Declare Your Independence. Now, I want to give you my personal endorsement of a wealthy U.S. citizen that is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He's produced a video for you. It's a real eye-opener, and I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to watch it. www.endofamerica1and7.com. endofamerica17.com. This video has the history of how we got where we are now and where we're going and why. Now, it's a lengthy video. It'll be about 20 minutes, but you need to watch this so you understand what's going to happen to this country and how you can protect your wealth and even benefit financially. Now, you go there. It's free. I want you to watch this video. You need to have this information so that you can survive the economic collapse that's coming to America. It's not if, it's when. That's End of America, the numbers 1and7.com. After you watch it, you'll understand why I endorsed it.